We're talking with Kevin Murphy with Food Chain. First of all, I guess, Kevin, tell me about your company.
I started Food Chain Communications in 2007 with the idea of helping people in food communicate. Now, the reason I did that is there was a study done in the late 1990s by Philip Morris Corporation. And it had a graph that showed everybody in our food system communicated to the person they sold to. And then after that, all communication ceased. My job was to then see that opportunity and see that there was a chance now for me to connect, say, farmers with grocers. Because those people are not speaking to each other in our normal food system enough. There are cases where they are. So we created a program called Farmer Goes to Market, which is designed to just do that. And then throughout the entire food chain, there's people that come to conclusions about agriculture that have no relationship with agriculture. And that's the goal. Connected. The logo on Food Chain is actually green on one end and satin silver on the other. It's the idea of connecting the field of agriculture, the green, with the satin silver, which is our modern food system.
Now, you were talking today to the ILAC group here about the morality issues that we have within agriculture today and the fact that we are really not connecting with a lot of our consumers because of this.
Yes, if you look at the criticism that's being leveled against agriculture, whether it be the absence claims of no hormones, no antibiotics, no, you know, whatever it is, and then the taking away of certain technologies, at its root, it is an ethical criticism. It's criticizing the farmer for using certain tools and processes in his management and calling him unethical by employing those. Unfortunately, our response has been through science or some other vehicle, most often scientifically. The problem is most people don't speak science language, and so we have to convert, and we have to understand that the criticism is lobbed at us from a moral perspective and be ready to answer from a moral perspective.
You were indicating that they're doing this with a lot of different things. You used the illustration, yes, of RSBT regarding with milk, and it's gone up from there.
Yeah, the both when Monsanto sold RBST and RBGH to Eli Lilly Corporation, it was at a time of distress. And that was because everybody did the same thing with RBST that they did with gestation crates. I mean, it is a blueprint, okay? And that is that you criticize the technology and then characterize the people that employ it as being immoral or unethical. Everybody's up in arms lately with the Panera Bread campaign that called farmers lazy by using certain technology. Well, you know, to me, I'd rather somebody call me lazy than call me unethical. And they've been calling us unethical in farming for much longer than they have lazy.
You were indicating that we really need to learn to talk in a couple of three different areas. What are those?
Yeah. Well, there's three areas to an effective argument. There's logos, pathos, and ethos. Logos is the reason part. Usually we translate that to scientific reasoning, which most people would say agriculture does well. Mm-hmm. There's pathos, which is emotion, which everybody would agree the activists do well. The final component is ethos, and that is being able to make your argument on a moral, ethical basis. And that is the great untapped region of making an argument for agriculture.
So for some of these specific areas that we've got big battles on right now, you pointed back to GMOs several,
yes,
times and said that they really, the big guns are out against GMOs,
yes,
it seems like, including organized religion.
Absolutely. You have to, I don't know what the GMO people are doing. I know that they have organizations out there and they're finally starting to put stuff out, but once again, they're not listening to what I'm telling them. And that is, if we can't learn to speak about GMOs from a moral, ethical perspective, then we're never going to win the day, no matter how many times we talk about the increased yield in crop production, okay? So while all that stuff is good, without the moral component of GMOs, they're going to continue to get beat. And this is spreading because it's a blueprint. I mean, remember, it is a blueprint. They're following the RBST blueprint and the gestation crate blueprint, and it's going to move to GMO. It already has, and they're already set up to lose.
How do we turn this tide?
Start speaking, number one, from an ethical perspective. Why, to those people that are using GMO seeds, tell me why you use GMO seeds from a moral or ethical perspective. Why do you do that? And then if you can explain that morally and ethically, share that with people. Make that your frontline defense. You can follow it with science. You can follow it with whatever else you feel needs to bolster that case. But first and foremost, start with that argument. And if you can do that, if you can show people that you're caring for the land and caring for people through the use of this GMO product, suddenly the terminology GMO becomes a lot less frightening.
So you try to bring in the emotion of the moment, I think you used the current terminology, moral high ground.
Yes. If you want to get to the moral high ground, because you're going to, I'm telling you right now, the people that are opposed to genetically modified are doing so on an ethical basis. Okay, so they're saying, as a farmer, you using GMOs is unethical because you are hurting the planet, you're leading to global warming, you're harming future generations' health, all of those things. Well, where's our answer for all those things? I mean, we could just take them on the inverse and start to answer each one of those individually ourselves. And if we did that, we'd win. But we're not doing that. We keep diverting back to kind of talking points. And unfortunately, our talking points are void of a moral component.
And so, I mean, where do we go? How do we, I think one of the conversations you've had out here, how do we get organized? How do we get our arms around this thing?
I mean, there's organizations out there that I think are trying to come together to fight on behalf of agriculture. I mean, I have severe reservations about them, but because I don't think they're devoted to it in enough. I think we have to be activists, for lack of a better term. We have to be passionate and activists as equal to the activists and as passionate as they are providing on the other side. And right now we're not. We're cold and mechanical about our defense. And I don't know how to go about that other than to call farmers to change it. Because ultimately, look, the farmer is the one who pays the penalty and the price here. And now humanity will because of farming. But farmers, first and foremost, are the core. I think we need to demand a new leadership and a new communication effort that breaks out of the old mold of awareness-based advertising, which is what we have now with Beef It's What's for Dinner and campaigns like that, which are all fine and good, but do nothing to answer today's modern criticism. It's a whole new era. I mean, it calls for us to be new communicators, communicate in a better way, in a different way than we ever have. We can't just follow the model we've always had. We can't keep doing Beef It's What's for Dinner and put a milk mustache on somebody and call it good.
One last area that you talked about was this component of the religious argument.
Yes.
The fact that there are activists out there that have tried to basically demean man,
yes,
bring him down to the level of animals to advance their arguments.
Oh, you know, I'm so glad you said that. There's several ways. One of the things I've often asked myself is why are you so passionate about this? Is number one, what I see as the greatest and ultimate threat of the food morality movement is the degrading of man. I don't believe that man himself understands his significance being made in the image and likeness of God. We don't pay attention to that. Years ago, they would say man living man is the glory of God. How far have we come from that idea of man to today? So these activists have gone out of their way, like Peter Singer and Matthew Scully, who have gone out of their way to redefine dominion. That's why Matthew Scully's book was called Dominion, subtitled The Power of Man, the Suffering of Animals, and Our Call to Mercy. That's why Peter Singer and Animal Liberation devoted a whole chapter called Dominion, because they think that our dominion is not flowing from our being made in the image and likeness of God. As a matter of fact, Peter Singer said the only reason a person could hang on to that is if he was a religious fanatic. So those people, they want to get to that topic and reposition it. We're not even addressing it.